Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Rossman, producer, and Carissa Rogers of the phones. And we do want to say a special welcome to those listening online. It's always great to have you with us at myfaithradio.com, or maybe you've got the Faith Radio app. Great way to take us with you wherever you go. So we're just saying welcome to you. Rick Warren says this: every church needs to grow warmer through fellowship, deeper through discipleship, stronger through worship, broader through ministry, and larger through evangelism. Today we're going to add one more to that list, and it really incorporates all of the above. In a moment, we're going to talk with Jake Mulder from the Fuller Youth Institute about growing young. Fuller Youth Institute's been thinking about it and engaging in effective ways to reach today's youth with the gospel and recognize that the church is the hope of the world. And boy, Ted, we kind of especially need that, don't we, as we head into the final presidential debate tonight?
Yes, indeed.
The church is the hope of the world.
Another teachable moment with your kids, right?
I think it will be, yes. Speaking of kids, yes. So we don't necessarily have a lot of hope in the process these days. But by the way, later this hour, we'll hear from Leith Anderson, who joins us every other Wednesday. We're going to talk a little bit about character in leadership and how we can unite as God's people after the election, because there will be life after November 8th.
Reconciliation will be needed, I'm sure, on many fronts.
We'll talk about that. You know, speaking of growing young, by the way, the book is called Growing Young, Six Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. So looking forward to having that conversation. But you know, we've been focusing this month on child sponsorship through Compassion International, and just want to encourage you to visit our website to find out more about sponsoring a child, how it can dramatically not only impact the life of a child, but their family, and really impact an entire village. So check it out, myfaithradio.com. It's a ministry partnership during the month of October, and we're just excited about that opportunity. Compassion does such a great work, and we're just honored to have them with us.
I encourage you to watch the video. It's only a minute and a half long there at myfaithradio.com. Just click on the Compassion link, first thing you see there, and just hear a story about how your sponsorship can make a difference.
Yeah, check that out, myfaithradio.com. Well, that's one way that you could invest in changing the life of a child. Meanwhile, the children in the West here, and adults as well, I guess, we're filling out time with screens, as John Stonestreet will point out on today's The Point.
How do you spend free time? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stonestreet with The Point. Whether you're waiting for the whistle or the bell, what you do afterward is probably very different from what people just a few decades ago did. Last month, the Brookings Institute released an analysis of data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics showing that Americans of all ages have drastically reduced their active leisure time and replaced it with screen time. Between 2004 and 2009, the average 8 to 18-year-old increased their time spent watching TV, browsing the web, or playing video games by an hour and a half. In the 7 years since then, it's continued to skyrocket. According to a study reported by CNN, Americans now spend an average of 10 hours a day with screens of some kind. Folks, we're remodeling our lives around technology, giving up sports, arts, and recreation to veg out. The correlated rise in attention disorders and childhood obesity paint a grim picture. So reclaim leisure. Go out and play. Interact on a personal level. Use that off switch to set your free time free. I'm John Stonestreet.
That was a good word from John Stonestreet. Something to contemplate and reflect on today. Well, you're talking about young people and their interests and their passions. We're going to find out how we can help young people discover and re-engage and love the church. And we're going to talk today with Jake Mulder, who's the Director of Strategic Initiatives at the Fuller Youth Institute and is actually pursuing a PhD at Fuller Theological Seminary. He's worked in a variety of ministry and professional roles, including as a youth pastor, ministry director with Youth for Christ, and a missionary with YWAM in Europe and Asia. And he's a co-author, along with Kara Powell and Brad Griffin, fellow workers there at the Fuller Youth Institute, on a new book called Growing Young, Six Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. And by the way, I want to mention, we do have, I think, four or so copies of this book to give away. So This will be a great resource, I think, for you as you plan and work in your church. And maybe just to pick up a copy and give it to your pastor or your leadership team there. You can sign up for that right now by calling Carissa and get your contact information. We'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Jake Mulder, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hey, thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
So we're going to talk about, you know, churches growing younger because the statistics, I guess, suggest that, you know, church attendance is declining and congregations are aging. But I want you to maybe talk a little bit about that. Does that just mean, though, that maybe those that were only marginally interested have stopped coming and the general population is aging? So maybe this isn't a concern, or is it?
Yeah, there are certainly mixed reviews on all the doom and gloom that we hear about the church today. So, yeah, let's take just a second to talk about why some are feeling the sense of doom and gloom. So according to Pew, if you look at those who identify as Christian, about 7 years ago, that number was 78% of the U.S. population. Today, that number is 71%, so a decline of about 7% in 7 years. If you look at denominations, you see the fact that there's no major Christian tradition in the United States that's growing. And then if you turn and you look at young adults, so specifically those ages 18 to 29, you'll see that they make up about 20% of the overall, the U.S. population, but they make up only about 10% of U.S. church attenders. So larger percentage of young adults in the U.S. population than those who attend church. And our perspective on that at the Fuller Youth Institute is certainly that there's reason to be interested in this, reason to be concerned and react to this. But our response is not one of fear or negativity, but believing God is up to something powerful in the world, and we wanted to learn more about what God might be doing in churches that are really thriving with this age group.
So this work summarized in the new book, Growing Young, is actually a result of a pretty extensive study you've done, right?
Yeah, it is. So we, about 4 years ago, we heard all the negative news that you were just talking about and said, well, what if we didn't focus on the bad news? What if we started to ask some questions, like what does it look like for churches who are thriving in their ministry with 15 to 29-year-olds, so teenagers and young adults? How might we learn more about those churches? So we spent the past 4 years studying about 250 churches from around the United States who are large churches, small churches of every type of denomination that you can imagine, churches that were recently planted, churches that have been around well over 100 years. And in the end, we've conducted one of the most comprehensive and collaborative studies in the United States of churches that are effective in their ministry with young people.
So is growing young, is it just all about having a good children or youth program? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Well, one of our findings is certainly that we are stepping beyond that. And what we're seeing is that many of the efforts that we've made over the last several decades to do better in our ministry to young people have actually ended up causing some problems that we didn't anticipate. So yes, we've actually discovered it's a myth that if a church wants to be more effective with a younger generation, they need to separate, let's say, the high school students from the rest of the church. They need to hire a young and very cool youth pastor, and it will be about focusing on youth in that way that's going to lead to greater effectiveness. Like I said, we found that that's a myth, as is the fact that you have to have a massive building, that you need to have young and very cool staff, that you have to be of a particular denomination or not be part of a denomination. None of those things in and of themselves seem to lead to greater effectiveness with young people.
And is that different today just because of the makeup of the millennial generation as opposed to, say, 30 years ago?
Yeah, in some ways, yes, but I think more of what I would say is no. Part of what we've discovered in our research is, yes, there are some significant nuances, cultural, social understandings that we need to pay attention to that have shaped millennials today. But more than anything else, we've actually found that it's ministry that's in many ways very ancient. It's ministry that in many ways is getting back to what we see in the New Testament that leads to greater effectiveness with especially this millennial generation. And that's the result of our study is that we landed on what we've come to call six core commitments that are essential for an overall congregation to engage in if they want to be more effective with teenagers and young adults.
Well, why don't you just give us the snapshot now, and then we'll take a break and come back and dive into those a little bit more. But there were six cores that are going to make a difference. So if people only have the next 2 minutes, they'll at least hear a snapshot.
Certainly, yep, I can handle those in 2 minutes. So six core commitments that I want to emphasize. It's essential that these are embodied by the overall congregation. This isn't something that a youth pastor or a children's worker alone is working on. So the first one is that they practice keychain leadership. It's a very empowering form of leadership that has to do with passing on the keys to a younger generation. The second is that these churches know how to empathize with today's young people. So rather than judging, criticizing from a distance, oh, millennials, they're so lazy or they're so entitled, they step into their shoes with empathy. The third, these congregations take Jesus's message seriously. So it's not running away from the depth of the gospel. It's actually engaging with it and running towards it. The fourth is that these churches know how to fuel a warm sense of community. More than anything else, teenagers and young adults told us they're part of their churches because their churches feel like a family. So that's the fourth. The fifth, these churches know how to prioritize young people and their families everywhere. Again, not just in the youth ministry or the children's ministry, but throughout the life of the entire church. And the sixth and final one is that these churches know how to be the best neighbors in their community. So that is the brief overview of what we learned from our study.
Mm-hmm. Talking about a recently completed study, groundbreaking research with over 250 of the nation's leading congregations in a variety of denominations, geography, sizes, all those things, to find out, are there some essential strategies to help young people discover and love your church? And indeed there are. And we're going to go over those in the moments ahead. Talking Growing Young today with Jake Mulder. Jake is the Director of Strategic Initiatives at Fuller Youth Institute. He's been a youth pastor and ministry director of Youth for Christ and missionary with the YWAM, and is working on the PhD at Fuller at the moment, and is a co-author of a new book along with Kara Powell and Brad Griffin called Growing Young. We've got some copies to give away, a good resource, a good summary of how churches can become more effective to advance God's kingdom. You want to sign up for one of those, we'll do a drawing at the end of the hour. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And you can join us with a question as well. We'll talk more with Jake in just a moment. The future is resting in the lives of our young people, and that we want them to engage in the church and engage in living for Jesus, sharing the gospel, being light and salt in today's world. And there's hope for that to happen. In fact, your church can really advance that by applying some important characteristics and principles and commitments. In fact, we're talking six strategies to help your young people discover and love your church. It's called Growing Young. Jake Mulder is the co-author of this new work from Baker, and Jake is with us today as Director of Strategic Initiatives at Fuller Youth Institute. And came across this quote from Craig Rochelle, who says, don't just delegate tasks to the next generation. He says, if you delegate tasks, you create followers. Instead, delegate authority to create leaders. You jump in talking about leadership, the first area, and you mentioned something called keychain leadership. Say more about that.
Yeah, I would love to talk about keychain leadership, and I certainly resonate with that quote from Craig Rochelle. So to explain keychain leadership, would love to do so with a short story about one of the churches we interacted with, if that's all right with
sure.
you. Okay, great. So we were in right outside of Philadelphia. As part of our study, we had actually visited several congregations, and we're talking with a leader whose name is Stretch Dean. And he was just this incredibly, incredibly effective youth pastor, associate pastor. And we just said, Stretch, how is it that you're so effective in your role in your church? And he said, well, to understand that, you need to go back to when I was a teenager. And my family, I had received my driver's license, and my parents had given me the keys to the family car. And as I drove down the street, I just naturally thought, well, I want to drive to church. I love to be there. So he headed to church. The child care worker was wrapping up for the day, and she saw that Stretch had his driver's license now and thought, well, maybe I could enlist Stretch to help me out. We're a bit short-handed. So after some conversation, Stretch agreed to help her out. She goes inside, and she comes back to him and hands him a key. And he says, well, you know, what's this key for? And she said, well, Stretch, this is actually a key to our church. And there's going to be times where I will need you to lock up, where I'll need you to help get supplies. And I know you well enough to know we can trust you with this key. And after that, Stretch didn't hear really another word she said. He's just staring at this key thinking, my pastor has this key. My Sunday school teacher has this key. People in my church who have power, who have authority, are entrusted with this key. But me, Stretch, I'm 16. And that was one small example that led to many, many other experiences for Stretch in his church when he was younger, where respected, seasoned leaders would hand him, it could be a physical key that opened a building, or more often it was a metaphorical key, was a figurative key of some sort of responsibility, some sort of area that he could own. And Stretch said, it was because these leaders trusted me, so what we've come to call keychain leadership, that we have found in churches across America, when those churches, when pastors especially, other congregational leaders, are willing to take out their keychain, and again, maybe physical, maybe this is a metaphor, but it's the areas of responsibility, the capabilities that they hold, the authority they hold, and they're willing to take a key off of their own keychain and hand it to a young person and say, here you go, you can lead. We're seeing young people especially engaged in those churches.
It seems like maybe a simple thing, but maybe something that we wouldn't even it wouldn't even cross our mind, perhaps, to do that and to really make a difference.
Yeah, we've come to use the analogy of teaching a young person how to drive as particularly applicable here. And one way that we could pass over our keys to young people, and unfortunately this is how we often see it done in churches, is that we hold a key, but we throw it to a young person from a distance. And we say, hey, this really needs to be done, so hope you can figure out how to use that key. And while none of us, I think, would intend to do it that way, unfortunately in practice, in our churches, it's just all too common where we don't mentor, we don't train, we don't pass off the keys slowly. If we do it, it's kind of a toss from a distance, and young people are left to sink or swim. The other way to go about it is, going back to the car analogy, that young people are kind of forced to sit in the passenger seat until they're maybe 35, 45, in some churches 55, and until they've reached that age, they're not entrusted with those keys. So what we're advocating for is a much more relational approach, just like we would teach a young person to drive, that we drive while they watch, that then we maybe let them step into the driver's seat, and we give them tips and pointers along the way until they're ready to drive on their own.
Talking about some essential strategies to help young people discover and love your church. And hopefully, as we carry on the conversation today, you'll find some things that you can apply in your own experience and work within your church. Talk a bit about the having empathetic responses to the questions, the doubts that young people have. That's one of your key areas as well.
Yeah. And when we started, on our initial list of what a church would have to be more effective with teenagers and young adults, empathy was not necessarily on that list. We wondered, maybe it's more about having a big budget, maybe it's about being able to hire the right staff, maybe it's about having really cool worship or a laser light show or smoke machine. But lo and behold, as we got into the study after 4 years, we landed on the importance of empathy. And what we mean by that is that throughout history, different generations might look at each other either with care or suspicion. But often we hear when people talk about millennials, there's the perspective, millennials are lazy or they're entitled or they're not willing to work hard, things like that. So as we dug into churches that seem effective with young people, we saw that instead of judging, instead of criticizing from a distance, these churches, they're able to step into the shoes of young people. They're able to understand, well, what is it that might be motivating their behavior rather than just being frustrated with the behaviors. And what we've seen is that all people are asking important questions about their identity. These are questions of who am I, questions about where they belong, so a question like where do they fit, and questions about their purpose, what sort of difference they make. And we found that while every generation and every person is asking those questions to a certain extent, today's teenagers, today's young adults, given all the shifts in culture and technology, they are asking those questions with a new fervor. There's a lot of heat when it comes to trying to figure those questions out today. And congregations can respond best by being willing to step into their shoes and understand their struggles, their hopes, and their dreams.
Along with that, I guess we need to allow for questions to take place, right, and admit that we maybe don't have all the answers.
Yeah, very much. And this very much integrates into one of the core commitments that we've come to call taking Jesus' message seriously. So instead of young people being drawn to churches that are shallow, that are easy, that don't require much of them, we actually heard the exact opposite from the teenagers and young adults in our study. They told us, the whole reason why I love my church, why my friends love my church, is because the church actually challenges us with the gospel. It challenges us with who Jesus is. But as you indicate, there's a particular way of doing that, and one way of engaging young people with the gospel is, yes, having a solid answer that, you know, there's no way to doubt that this answer could ever be right, and we just deliver that to young people very nice and very packaged and complete and ask them to buy into that. And I'd love to share a short story that we came across while we were conducting this study of another way to go about that, if that's
okay.
Well,
let's do that on the other side of the break, because we do have one coming up here in about 2 minutes, and so we don't want to miss the...
Yeah, I don't want to go too long there.
No, well, of course, we could always leave people hanging, I suppose, in the middle of it. We've done that before as well, but we'll return in a couple minutes to hear more. We're talking today about, you know, really helping our churches become vibrant. I mean, the reality is that churches across the nation are losing both members and vitality as increasing numbers of young people disengage. But thanks to some new groundbreaking research with more than 250 of the nation's leading congregations, the folks at the Fuller Youth Institute have found some important strategies, six essential, we call them commitments, that are going to help young people discover and love your church. We're talking about Growing Young. That's the name of the new book. And we do have some copies of the book to give away, too. And I hope that as you heard even just a few of the commitments, that you've been encouraged by it and want to find out more, something that you could use in your role in church leadership. Pass it on to your pastoral team as well. It'd be great. You can sign up. We've got four copies to give away, and we'll do that here at the end of the hour. So give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a question, we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Or you can submit that online if that's more convenient. Go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can use the email link there to submit your question or comment, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. Talking with Jake Mulder, he's one of the co-authors of the new book, Growing Young. Jake's the Director of Strategic Initiatives at Fuller Youth Institute. He's worked in a variety of ministry and professional roles, including as a youth pastor in the Reformed Church of America, a ministry director with Youth for Christ, and missionary with Youth with a Mission. We'll hear more in just a couple minutes. Jesus should be drawing us in, but we know that in many circumstances, situations around our country and around the world, that there is a disengagement. So we're talking about ways to help young people discover and love the church. Growing Young is the name of a new book, co-written by Kara Powell, Brad Griffin, and Jake Mulder. Jake is my guest today. They're all three part of the Fuller Youth Institute. Jake is Director of Strategic Initiatives there and has served in a variety of ministry areas, Youth for Christ, YWAM, served as a youth pastor in the RCA for a while, and we're talking today about some of these core commitments. Mentioning just before the break, one of the cores is that we take Jesus seriously, and you were going to just give an illustration of that, Jake, so we'll let you jump back in.
Yeah, I wanted to tell a story. We came across the story of a young person while we were conducting this study. So this young person wasn't in the study, but we heard about their story, and his name was Steve. And we heard about how a number of years ago, Steve, as a young person, he was part of his church, and he went to his pastor and said, "Pastor, does God know if I raise my finger?" And the pastor said, "Yes, Steve, God knows everything." Well, Steve was a pretty astute young person, and he pulled out a magazine cover that depicted some of the struggles of what were happening with a group of people in Africa, and they're starving, they're suffering. And Steve said, "Well, Pastor, does God know about what's happening with these people in Africa, and why doesn't God do anything about it?" And as the story was recounted to us, we heard that the pastor responded with something along the lines of, "Well, Steve, I know you don't understand that, but God has it all taken care of too, and you don't need to worry about it." Steve, not at all satisfied with that answer, turned around, walked out of the church, and never stepped foot inside of that church again. And you may have heard of this particular Steve. His last name is Jobs. So Steve Jobs, who ran Apple for so many years, started out in the church and was part of a church, but ended up walking away. I'm sure there were a variety of reasons, but at least as one reason, he did not find Christianity as something compelling enough, something big enough, as he looked at the world around him. So in light of that story, what we've seen in the churches in our study, who are engaging young people well, is that it's not just about giving young people apologetics are important, yes, but it's not about just giving young people well-rehearsed apologetic answers to their toughest questions. It is introducing them to and challenging them with the person of Jesus. I'll pause there for a second. I can keep going unless you want to ask a follow-up and anything there.
There is so critical, you know, for us at any age that we understand the centrality of Christ, and that, of course, kind of gets off in the weeds sometimes today because the message of the gospel kind of gets clouded by so many influences. And I appreciate, too, that as you address it, you talk about that, you know, this is not just a message of faith in Christ that we're saved from something, but being saved for something, that there is a bigger calling on our lives as well. Say a bit more about that.
Yeah, very much. So in this sense, while we love and celebrate so much of the focus that's been put towards evangelism by previous generations in the U.S., we found in some ways kind of the pendulum swinging to the other side, where the young people in our study, it's not that they didn't believe in an afterlife or were skeptical about an afterlife, but to them, the gospel had implications so much for what's happening here and now. So that's where you said it's not just that they're saved from something later, it's that they're saved for something now. And that was so much of what it was that drew them to their congregations. And I'll also mention the piece, referring back to the Steve Jobs story, is young people in our study were so much less to engage in, we could call it abstract beliefs, or we heard so much less about the four spiritual laws as a way to go about following Jesus. And it was more so they talked about the person of Jesus, the real person in his life and what he did and what he taught. And we found young people just captivated by that and wrestling with that in a way that in some ways Jesus was not about offering specific, you know, pat answers to every question, but he often invited people into a much larger story and all the complexity that comes with that.
You talk a lot about the community, one of the six core essentials commitments, and use the word warm. Is there anything that we can do besides just being friendly? Is there something more to being warm? Of course, here in the upper Midwest, we're not too far away from being really interested in warm.
Yeah, yes, very much. So in our study, again, when we asked young people, why is it that you love your church so much? More than just about any phrase, we heard young people refer to the fact that their church was like a family. their church was like their family. That their church, yes, it wasn't just nice. Young people they can find nice in many places, but their churches were a place where they could find a sense of acceptance, a sense of belonging, a sense of people who really cared about them, not just while they were at the church, but would want to know more about their life overall. And one of the things I want to encourage listeners with, too, is we found this isn't just the work of pastors. There was a group of 20-somethings that we talked to at one church who just talked about this man, Bill, who stood out to them for so many reasons. He cared about them. He knew their name. He would attend, whether it was their sporting events or other extracurricular activities. And when we asked more about Bill, they said, no, he's not our 22-year-old youth pastor. Bill is a 76-year-old retiree who invests in the young people at this church, and the young people at the church love him, and they love the church for it.
Is that a reminder that we should pursue more intergenerational opportunities? The churches have traditionally been kind of segregated by age.
Yeah, very much, and very much that we should pursue more intergenerational opportunities. We think this is a significant moment and a significant opportunity for the church that in so many ways we've made our ministry today about each age group being segmented in their own ministry area. And one of the churches that we saw navigate this area very well is a church in Volga, South Dakota. So not too far from Sioux Falls or from Brookings, South Dakota, if you're familiar with that area. They were a church that many years ago at one point was very much segmented, separated by age group, and partially as a result of that went through a period of significant decline. And as the church told us in hindsight, many people wondered if it was time to shut the doors. But it was out of connecting the 9-year-old and the 90-year-old, connecting the teenager to someone who is in their 60s, that over the last 15 years, this church has walked through a massive revitalization process, is growing, is thriving, has young and old generations worshiping, doing life together. And this is in a small rural community. It's a church of under 200 people. So as we said before, this is something for big churches, but this is also something for small churches.
It doesn't mean that there probably aren't challenges or there's kind of messiness along the way, right, to change maybe the way you're looking at church?
Yeah, there are significant challenges, and as you mentioned, significant messiness, which is where we want to be so clear that we are not recommending or trying to sell a new set of kind of just change your church quickly, anything like that. What we discovered in our research is that it's many of our efforts to transform our church tomorrow or something that we've been promised will be quick and easy. And what we found, the gospel church, it's not quick. It's not easy. Often significant and lasting change has to come about slowly, very carefully. But based on these 6 core commitments that we've been talking about, we found that when churches engage these thoughtfully, when churches engage these strategically, it's possible for us to navigate the change that we need and have a church that's thriving with all generations, young people included.
One of the areas, the commitments you talk about, talks about engaging in the neighborhood. How does that help a church grow young?
Yeah, we have found, and we've come to call this, that these churches aim to be the best neighbor in their community. And we say being the best neighbor, not just being an okay neighbor or being a good neighbor, because so many of the young people who we spoke to were sensitive to the fact that church did not always seem to have a great reputation in their community, whether that was their church, whether it was Christianity more generally. The young people told us that often churches, Christians, seem to be known about the things that they're against rather than the things that they're for. And we have a generation of younger people today that are they're so passionate about what God is doing in the world. They're so passionate about social justice. They're so passionate about good things happening in their neighborhoods that churches who are able to engage in that work and really allow young people, invite young people into that, those churches seem to thrive overall.
So does a congregation need a cause to rally around, or how does that work?
Yeah, very, very much. And that's actually an opportunity for me to share something that I meant to mention earlier, which is engagement in these 6 core commitments is so contextual. And we saw over and over again in the churches that we studied that rather than say, pick the leadership team picking a cause or a focus. These churches were very intentional about listening to what God was doing within the lives of those in their congregation. So for some congregations, certainly it might mean that the leadership team or someone needs to pick a specific cause, and that might work for that church in this case. But more often what we saw is that churches would go through a period of significant listening to the people in the church, but especially to the young people in the church, to understand what was God doing in their hearts, what was God doing in their minds, and then how might the church go there together. You can see how this begins to intersect with concepts like keychain leadership. These kind of just, they get messy, they overlap each other. So not easy. There's struggle involved, but we think it's essential that this is the direction churches need to go if we're going to continue to thrive into the future.
And maybe just a word of encouragement, whether you're maybe a small church in Volga, South Dakota, or you're a big church in, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that there we all need to continue to keep pressing toward inviting others, and that not to give up, I guess, right? That there are some ways that we can see the ministry advance and churches grow.
Yep, I would very much echo that. And so much of the reason we conducted this study is we wanted it to be a message of hope. And in the midst of some of the bad news about the church today, we don't think the church is in the midst of a permanent decline in the United States. We think God is doing something new. We think perhaps there's just a period of renewal coming in the church, and we're actually going to see brighter days ahead of us.
As you know, working at the Fuller Youth Institute, I know you're pretty passionate about youth and been working with Youth for Christ and Youth of the Mission. And
yeah, there's a lot
pastor,
of youth in my title.
Sure, that's right. So you're bullish on youth, I take it.
We are, and I want to say, yes, we're bullish on youth, but not at the exclusion of other groups. And that's one of the beautiful things that we discovered in this study, and that's the idea of this title, Growing Young, is that not only do these churches have young people, but they have young people and they engage them in a way that there's growth in the overall church. So that's the growing young. We're not promising numerical growth, that if you will focus on young people, you'll see more and more people show up. We're not promising that, I will say, although we often saw that connection. But there's growth in so many other ways. When young people are part of a church, there's more energy, there's more vitality, there is more passion. The way in which they ask questions, it challenges everyone else in the congregation to explore those same themes. So we think that engaging young people is not just good for young people, we think it's good for the overall church.
Good conversation today with Jake Mulder, Director of Strategic Initiatives at Fuller Youth Institute and co-author of the new book called Growing Young, Six Essential Strategies to Help Young People Discover and Love Your Church. It's new from Baker. We've got some copies to give away. The phone number is 877-93-FAITH if you'd like to sign up for one. Jake, thank you for your work in this area and for your encouragement today.
Yeah. Hey, Neil. Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Connecting Faith.
There's revival. And it's spreading like a wildfire in my heart. A Sunday morning, hallelujah. And it's lasting all week long. Can you hear it? Can you feel it?
Connecting Faith, and every other Wednesday we have opportunity to connect with Leith Anderson, who has been president of the National Association of Evangelicals since 2006 and was a senior pastor of Wooddale Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota for 35 years before that. And we I have the opportunity to connect with him, just talk about a variety of issues. And Leith, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I thought in light of our conversation the past few minutes on growing young and talking a bit about encouraging young people to discover and love the church. And we had a pastor on last week who said, you know, there was a time in his life where he viewed children's ministries as kind of a means to an end, hoping that he'd get the kids there, the parents would come. It's wondering, do you think that maybe is a common issue for pastors to wrestle with?
There's so many pastors with so many issues. Probably you can find somebody that's got just about any opinion you want. That would not be my opinion.
Okay.
My opinion are that children and youth are actually people, and that we need to reach people, and we need to minister to them, and it's not about their age or who else they're going to bring. It's that we need to minister to them.
Yeah. Which... absolutely true. And but there were, I'm sure there were challenges as a pastor to say, you know, we the trends as we addressed, you know, there is a declining church attendance and it's also aging. So do you see any changes in that trend, or maybe are there areas where that is changing and looking better?
Yeah, I challenge the notion that there's declining church attendance. I don't think that's the case. It's declining in some demographics in some areas, but overall, I think it's pretty stable and even slightly growing in America. But when it comes to youth ministry, it's, you know, it's different because of different generations. The baby boomers, 76 million of them, were our largest generation, born from 46 to 64, and it was that generation that really brought youth ministry to churches. It brought Youth for Christ, Billy Graham, all this amazing emphasis on youth. But then with millennials, we have those born 1980 into 2000 plus, a larger generation even than the baby boomers. But the current youth generation is smaller. There are fewer children. Millennials are getting married later, having fewer children. So a church that decides we're going to have a lot of 12-year-olds and they weren't born 12 years ago, that's, you know, you can't get the people that weren't born. So every church leader really needs to have a pretty good handle on their own community. What are the demographics there? What's happening in the schools? In some areas, it's really growing. Others, it's really changing. Others, it's really declining. And then defining ministry for who we're going to reach in our particular situation. But, you know, there's one thing that's always the same, every generation, and that is relationships. Effective youth ministry really is more about people than programs, although programs and facilities, they're important as well.
Sure. Oh, Leith, I know your latest book was focusing on voting, and you know, even though we probably don't want to talk much more about it, there's a major presidential debate tonight. We're not that far away from election, and obviously revelations about, you know, the character of both candidates makes us wonder, I guess, how much should character factor into our choices? I've noticed the data just out yesterday said party affiliation was a stronger predictor than faith in for some people voting. What are your thoughts on how we look at maybe this year's particular situation?
Well, you've got it right that we need to be careful that we don't talk too much about it, because there is election fatigue in America. You know, people are watching other programs on television and doing other things because they're kind of wearing thin. But I would say character counts. It's not the only factor, but it is a really important factor. Just recently, I actually looked up the definition of character, and at least the definitions I found were it's moral excellence. And another definition is it's the way someone thinks, feels, and behaves. So, you know, I know people talk about David in the Old Testament and Paul in the New Testament and adultery and murder and all those things are part of their biographies, but they clearly had hearts for God, and that was part of their character. You know, another way I was thinking about it, in one of our major airlines, if you call in to make a reservation or change your seat or whatever, you get a recording, and it says, stay on this call for 15 seconds after you talk to the agent, and we're going to take a survey with one question. And the one question, and you've got to decide yes or no, the question is, would you hire this person to work for you? And that's both a character question and a competence question. In other words, did you relate to this person and trust this person? And the other, were they competent in what they had to say? So we can't fully predict how a leader will handle an unanticipated or future situation. But, you know, we need to make a judgment, and judgments on these things are based on past performance and character and qualifications. So, I mean, that's how we choose a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, a counselor, a husband, a wife. And I think it's the way we choose leaders as well. Character is really important. It really counts. It's one of the major factors.
Aleith, obviously, after November 8, there will be fellowshipping in church, and we'll be breaking bread together. Is there, anything that maybe advice you'd give about, how do we maybe bridge the polarization that has taken place?
Well, we bridge the polarization by calling people back to the biblical norms. And keep in mind that in the New Testament, there were Jews and Gentiles, there were Romans and Greeks, there were people that had just astonishingly different political perspectives. And they came together in Jesus Christ. And I mean, when you think about that, I mean, slave owners and slaves together in the same church, and they had a bond in Jesus Christ. And that's what our churches need to call us to, that's a far bigger reason and 10 million times more important than political affiliation or opinion.
Yeah. Leith, just curious, you pastored for, one church for 35 years, but before that as well. But how do you address hot topics, those areas where, culture is, making the just challenging us, I guess, in how we live out our faith. How do you approach that? Any advice for pastors today?
Well, that's not an easy decision to make because there are always hot topics. I think the concern for pastors is around what is prophetic and what is political and what's personal and what's popular. Wow, and for words that start with P there. And I think there's a risk that we can sometimes confuse or conflate these things. So it's possible for a pastor to have a personal or a popular opinion and somehow act as if that's prophetic. My advice is pretty simple, and that is always start with the Bible and stick with the Bible. I'll tell you a personal test of mine. If I'm explaining Bible principles that relate to some hot topic, I think it through and say, would these principles be the biblical principles that could be explained to somebody who speaks a different language in Africa or Asia? Or what if I could go back in time and preach and teach this 1,000 years ago in the Middle East or Europe? That's my test on whether these are truly biblical. Talking to people that have never heard of the United States or don't know anything about our current hot topics. And then if the answer to that question is yes, then on the basis of what the Bible teaches and those principles, then I can talk about those things in terms of current situations and current decisions. As a pastor, I've always leaned towards teaching the Bible systematically and then tying in the topics rather than starting with the topics and throwing in the Bible.
We start with the Bible, stick with the Bible. That is wise counsel. I always appreciate the opportunity to connect to Aleith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals, longtime pastor. Aleith, always good to talk with you. Thanks for your good words today.
Good. Thanks for our conversation. It's great.
Aleith Anderson joining us today on Connecting Faith. And earlier this hour, we heard from Jake Mulder from Fuller Youth Institute. If you missed any part of today's conversation, you can always catch it online. We do post our interviews on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. By the way, when you go into myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page, you'll see a tab there for Ask the Professor. And tomorrow is our monthly installment of Ask the Professor. Dr. Mark Muska and Dr. Brad Sickler from the University of Northwestern come in studio, and we field your questions on the Bible, faith, and the church. And you can, send your question in early. If you've got something on your mind, something you heard, maybe even something from today's conversation you'd like them to react to, submit that. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page and use the Ask the Professor tab, and We'll talk tomorrow and get your questions answered right here on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening.